Well, and if I am related to a single one of them, that will be my secret until my dying day. There are certain things I believe a man just ought not to tell about himself. That very well may be one of them. As we were driving over here this afternoon, a thought suddenly came to me. I don't know why I hadn't thought of it before, that it was just 10 years ago this very weekend that my wife and I drove up from Moorhead, Kentucky, fresh out of college, looking for a teaching job. And lo and behold, we landed in the Northmont system, and I hope that's not too much of a dirty word down this way, but since I'm no longer there, perhaps you'll be able to bear with that for a moment. But just 10 years ago today, this weekend, I was interviewed and accepted the position there, and then we began our life and our association with brethren in this area. Although we moved from there 4 years ago this summer, our heart very much remains with the work of the Lord here in this area and with the many good brethren and friends that we made in this area. I've been asked to report briefly on the progress of the Lord's work in Fredericktown. And let me suggest that indeed there has been a good deal of progress made. But what progress has been made has been accomplished because of the good fortune and the blessing of the Lord. One of the things that I think has given me the greatest satisfaction has been the spiritual growth within the congregation. Now, we've grown numerically. We've had to grow numerically to replace the ones that have moved away, the ones that have died, and the ones that have become unfaithful. But in spite of all of those things, we've grown numerically, but more importantly, we've grown spiritually. There are those that, one family in particular, who just 4 years ago, their attendance was somewhat sporadic. And that individual now is under close scrutiny as a possible elder. He's made tremendous strides, tremendous growth. Another individual who would take no part whatsoever in the work of the congregation in any type of public or active way is now teaching a Bible class and doing an excellent job as the treasurer for the congregation. I mention those as just a couple of examples of the kind of growth within the congregation, the type of advancement and maturity that we've been able to see. If my wife and I have contributed in any small way, we certainly have been blessed and fortunate. We are at peace within. As I look around at the problems and turmoil in some congregations, I count that as a tremendous blessing. We've had our problems. We have our problems now that we yet need to face. But I can say with all candor and honesty that every problem that has arisen in the last 4 years has been faced humbly and calmly. It's been faced in a very quiet, meek spirit. And the Word has in every instance been the guide to solve the problems that we faced. We've made tremendous strides toward becoming self-supporting. When we moved there and began to work with the congregation in August of 82, the local congregation there was providing 37% of our financial support. That's now up to 95%. And I have good expectations that by this time next year, I'll be able to write the elders a letter and say, keep your money or send it someplace else. There's a tremendous emphasis being placed upon being self-sufficient and self-supporting now. I think in part, it's come from the fact that we're beginning to have greater influence among the institutional churches in the area than we've ever had before. And we've had some that have left institutionalism and identified with us. We have some that have left instrumental churches and have identified with us. And as we've worked with them and studied with them and tried to bring them along, we've tried to emphasize to them the all-sufficiency of the church. One man said, if we're going to preach it, let's work a little harder. And let's be totally self-sufficient so that our local evangelist is not dependent upon any other congregation for his financial support. And I believe that, Lord willing, that goal will be accomplished in the very near future. We have had for the last 2 years a call-in radio program that, although has not reaped tremendous benefits, What benefits and gains that have been made have well been worth the time and the money that's been expended. We aren't getting a tremendous amount of calls now. We dealt with a number of very controversial subjects in about the first year and a half of the program. And we heard through the grapevine, and in some cases directly from individuals, that we were really causing them to search and think and ponder, and that their own beliefs and their own practices were being challenged. They were going to their preachers who couldn't give them satisfactory answers. And in many cases, those local preachers, and I can know of at least two cases in which it was addressed publicly from their pulpits, that they were not to listen. And under no circumstances were they to call our program. But we're still reaching a number of people. We have one family that has identified with us, another family that has identified with the Lord's Church in Utica, and another family that is very, very close. The wife is coming, the son is coming, and when some problems are worked out, the husband, I believe, will be there in the very near future. One of the most positive things that has occurred in the last couple of years, in particular just within the last few months, has been the addition of the Whitney family. And I want to tell just a little bit about them, because they've been such an inspiration to us that perhaps you'll receive some benefit from them as well. Tom Whitney was reared in the Church of Christ, reared believing that he was a part of the New Testament church, working, worshiping as God would have the church to work. He began to listen to the call-in radio program from Brown Street out of Akron, and then began to listen to our program, and suddenly came to the conclusion that he had not been a part of the New Testament church. That indeed the name was there, but that's all that was there that should have been there. Tom's father had been an elder in the particular instrumental Church of Christ of which he had been a member for a number of years and had just recently died. His uncle had been the one who started the congregation. Tom himself had served as an elder in that congregation, although he admitted after we had studied that he certainly wasn't qualified to do so. Tom and his family left that church, the one that had been the church of his family and heritage, and is now driving 25 miles one way. And that's not 25 miles over well-paved, straight, four-lane highways. But from Danville to Frederictown is one of those drives that there's no good way to get there. But you've got a snake and curve and go up and down. Well, then you think you're back in either West Virginia, Kentucky, or someplace down in one of those places. It takes them a little better than a half an hour to make the drive, and yet they're more than willing to do that. They have a tremendous search for knowledge, a great appreciation for the truth, and are actively teaching others the simple gospel of Jesus Christ. He and I have a regular weekly Bible study set up in his home with a couple that grew up at the foot of the hill where Tom grew up, that are very near the point that I believe in the very near future they too will be obeying the gospel and will be children of God. But it's just a tremendous blessing to see men like Tom and his family that are willing to take a very courageous and brave stand for the truth, realizing materially everything that they're giving up. His mother called up twice one morning when I was there studying with Tom and threatened to commit suicide if he left the church at Danville, and she was very sincere. And what she said, she was extremely despondent because there was the possibility that her son was going to leave that congregation. But yet he said, whatever mom does, she's answerable for herself. I'm responsible for myself, my wife, and my family. And in spite of what she may do, I've got to do what I know the Lord wants me to do. Brethren, you've got men like that working with you. And you've got men like that supporting you. You can't help but grow. We've had contact through the radio program with another family, one of the most unique couples I've ever met in my life, one of the most lovely and most honest people I've ever met. Had met the wife and had been able to we've been able to have some influence with her. One of a very fine couple from Fredericktown went and visited with her and her husband. They came back all excited and said, "You've got to go talk to him. You've got to get over there. Don't wait. Get over there as soon as you can." And so I went over there. They warned me, said, "The man's got a problem. Maybe you can help him." Well, I went over there not knowing what it was going to be, except it was a problem. Walked in, and his wife, after it had been there about 3 minutes, said, "What are you going to tell him?" And I said, "Now look," I said, "we came to get to know you first. Don't feel like you have to tell your life story tonight." She said, "Well, you might as well get it over. You're going to have to tell him sometime." And so he told us. Explained their marital situation. One in which up until recently he felt very comfortable with. He came to realize through some very serious and intensive study of his own that their marriage was not right in the eyes of God. They're now in the process of making arrangements to separate in order that the two of them can work and worship faithfully to the Lord. He said he realized that there was no sense being a hypocrite. So there's no sense realizing that I'm in a married situation that conscientiously I cannot abide with. And go ahead and worship the Lord, because he said that's vain. But he said as soon as these arrangements are made, as soon as we can get it complete, I'll be there if I have to crawl. And I believe he was very honest and sincere. Those kinds of people indeed have been refreshing with which to work. We've had two families that have recently left institutional congregations. Unfortunately, one of them is on extremely shaky ground, and I fear that we're going to lose them if there aren't some very drastic changes made in their attitudes. In the last meeting that we had last spring, we tried a new approach to getting the word out and advertising and inviting people. We had each member of the congregation that was willing to participate, and we had over, I think it was, percentage-wise, it was something just over 90% of the congregation that participated, those that were of adult age. We had each of them write three of their friends, at least three of their friends, and invite them to come and attend. We then sent a letter from the congregation inviting them to attend, and then many of them we were able to catch on the telephone and give them a third invitation. We sent out 95 letters from the congregation. We were able to call 45 of those, and out of those, 31 attended the meeting. Out of that number, we had other visitors, but out of that number, 31 came. It was an incredible feeling of excitement within the congregation to see that happen. When you'd see somebody walk in the door that had never been there before, and the person would be sitting there that had wrote them and invited them to begin with, you'd just see a big, bright smile light up, and they just sat up real straight. And you know what? You could hear people singing that didn't always sing real loud before, but their friend was there. And they sang out, and we had a tremendously successful meeting. We recently begun an organized personal work program. We've had, admittedly, some opposition to it. We've had some members that have accused us of bordering on getting involved in the Crossroads movement. I haven't found the border yet, but I invited them to point it out. We've divided ourselves for sake of organization into three groups. And there's a man responsible for each group to show them what names are available and to collect the cards after they visited, and that's about the sum total of the organization. Yet there's some that have said you're bordering on being involved in the Crossroads movement. But in spite of that, the men have determined that we need to be Nehemiahs. That even though there may be some opposition from within, that we need to just simply use that as motivation to work that much harder. And the work is being done in getting the gospel out. We have recently had to disfellowship three saints, two of which had been converted from the Church of the Nazarene, but unfortunately went right back. One fella, still haven't figured out. He just simply became unfaithful and decided he wanted to give up. One of the greatest sources of strength and encouragement that I've received over the time that we've been there has been from the local preacher study that we've had going now for about 3.5 years. There are six of us that are, quote, charter members. of the study group, and we've had three others that have moved in and joined in the meantime. And as hard as it may be to seem, we've had nine of us together and have yet to have a serious squabble or disagreement. It's been a very peaceful and a very motivating situation. In August of this summer, Brother George LeMasters, one of the elders at Barberton, is going to be coming down and will be presenting a weekend series for us on the relationship between a congregation and the elders and the work of elders. Sometime after that, we intend to begin the procedures of appointing elders. There are men that I believe are qualified and that the majority of the congregation believes that are qualified, that are willing to serve. And Lord willing, at least by the end of the year, we'll be organized as God would have us to be organized with elders and deacons. And for that, we're extremely grateful. There have been doors of opportunity that have opened in the last 2 years since last I was here that I would never have dreamed of having been opened. There have been successes and progresses beyond our dreams. Yet there have been failures. There have been disappointments. And yet I believe one man, a member of the congregation, hopefully soon to be an elder, made the following observation after our last business meeting that I believe sums up our current status. He said, "The wheels are turning, perhaps slowly, but we're at peace. The wheels are moving. Let's not allow them to stop." And I believe that well summarizes the condition that we're in. We're not perfect. My mom told me when I went there, don't expect them to be perfect, because once you get there, they won't be anymore. We've had our work that has turned out to be silver and gold and precious stone. But we've had our work that's been stubble, that's been straw, that's been hay. But I'm thankful to the Lord that I believe we're in a better position than we were 2 years ago when I was here. We're stronger, more zealous, more diligent. We've gained some, we've lost a few. But the gains, the progress, has far outweighed any negative that might have occurred. I don't know how to make a smooth transition from that into what I want to say next. And so I guess it's best just not to try to make a real smooth, polished transition. But I was asked to give a brief report on the progress of the work, and I don't know if that was brief or not. But that's what you got, whether it was brief or not. And then asked to just present a few thoughts that might be of challenge and of benefit to all of us this evening. Imagine yourself, if you would, in the following situation. You're a young person. Now, that may be difficult for some of you to imagine, but try. You're a young person, 17 years old. And suddenly, your brothers turn against you. And you find yourselves uprooted from your home, thrown into a foreign environment. And to make matters worse, you're a slave. You're a captive. How would you respond to a situation like that? How would you react? What would you do? What kind of situation would you find yourself in spiritually if that happened to you? Well, that happened to Joseph. At about the age of 17, Joseph was uprooted from his family. He was taken to Egypt, and there he was sold into slavery, and he became a slave to Potiphar, one of the officials in Egypt. And yet, in spite of all of that, Joseph, as a young man, was able to introduce to the godless nation of Egypt the God of the universe, the God of his forefathers. In Genesis, the 39th chapter, and in verse 2, we read that the Lord was with Joseph, and he was a successful man. And he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. And his master said that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord made all that he did to prosper in his hand. So Joseph found favor in his sight and served him. Then he made him overseer of his house and all that he had put in his hand. So it was from the time that he made him overseer of his house and all that he had, that the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. And the blessing of the Lord was on all that he had in the house and in the field. Joseph, as a young man, was able to introduce to Potiphar the God who created the universe, the God, the I Am. He wasn't an aged, well-versed, well-matured veteran soldier, but a young man who found opportunities to testify the existence of the one true God. And he did it. Not in good circumstances, but in trying circumstances. If we continue reading in chapter 39, down in verse 21, here's Joseph. He's trying to do everything that he can right. He's trying to please the Lord. He's trying to please his master. He's serving the Lord. He's testifying of the existence of God. And what happens? His master's wife tries to seduce him. He does the right thing. He rejects her advances and he flees fornication. But what happens? He's thrown into prison. The woman lies about him. The lies are believed and he's cast into prison. Poor Joseph. He tried to serve the Lord and his brothers hated him. He tried to serve the Lord and he found himself a slave in Egypt. He tried to serve the Lord and now he finds himself a prisoner, captive, in a foreign prison. But even there, Joseph doesn't stop. You see, even while in prison, in verse 21, the Lord was with Joseph and showed him mercy. And he gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. And the keeper of the prison committed to Joseph's hand all the prisoners who were in the prison. Whatever they did there, it was his doing. The keeper of the prison did not look into anything that was under Joseph's hand because the Lord was with him. And whatever he did, the Lord made it prosper. The Lord prospered Joseph, blessed Joseph, elevated him to a position of, I guess, like a superintendent, perhaps, within the prison. He was an overseeing prisoner. And there he came in contact with two men, a butler and a baker. He was able to foretell their dreams, and through that he was elevated to the high honor of being able to approach Pharaoh, the king of Egypt, the mightiest man in the land. And there, before Pharaoh, he was able to give witness and testimony that there was a God in heaven. Not just a bunch of dumb idols that men would bow down before, but there was the I Am who sat on the throne of heaven, and there he ruled. You see, Joseph, a young man, was able to introduce to Potiphar, to those in the prison, to Pharaoh, and to eventually spread throughout the nation of Egypt the knowledge of Jehovah God. What I find interesting is how this young man did it. He didn't do it by public preaching. He didn't do it by standing up on a soapbox on a street corner and holding his Bible up and preaching to the throngs. He didn't do it that way. But Joseph gave testimony of the existence of God by daily living. And let me suggest that that's the strongest way, one of the most effective ways that we can turn men's attention to God, to the uniqueness of those that are converted and molded and shaped after the heart and life of Jesus Christ, is by the purity and the holiness of our daily lives. Joseph was a young man who wasn't afraid to speak of God. Even under trying and difficult circumstances, Joseph spoke the name of God. God didn't send an aged wise man into Egypt, but he sent an enthusiastic, faithful, godly young man. He sent a young person who was willing to work for the Lord. And through his efforts, Israel was saved from famine and had a place in which they could be nurtured and grow into a mighty nation. But what might have happened if it hadn't have been for that godly, faithful young man who was willing to do the bidding and the will of the Lord? One of the things, and perhaps here's where the smooth transition should have come, one of the things that has given me tremendous pleasure at Fredericktown is the willingness, the foresight, and the wisdom of the men in beginning to nurture and develop and work with the young people within the congregation. Finding things that the young people can do and putting them to work. And indeed, we work them. Joseph was a young man, 17, when he was sold into Egypt. He was young. Didn't have all the experience of his father. Didn't have all the knowledge of his father. But he was a young man who was willing to master and overcome the circumstances in which he lived. He was a young man that was willing to live a wholesome, godly life. A young man that was willing to speak of God. A young man that was able to accomplish a lot for the Lord. Let me encourage the young people here. As you see yourself as a young person, don't see yourself just as someone who's a nuisance and a bother, who's a teenager and in those impossible years. But see yourself, Lord willing, as an enthusiastic, faithful, godly, young Christian who has opportunities and who will find themselves in situations that no one else will be in. Who will find themselves in the company of individuals that no one else perhaps will ever be able to influence for the cause of Christ. But you, rally yourself to be like Joseph. David was another young man of exceptional courage and exceptional faith. David, as a young man, was willing to do what the bravest and the strongest and the best prepared of the Israeli army refused to do. When the warriors of Israel stood still, better yet, when the warriors of Israel shook with fear because of Goliath, David was willing to stand, as it were, toe-to-toe and eye-to-kneecap with Goliath, armed with nothing but a sling and a few rocks, but armed, more importantly, with the power and the confidence and trust that he had in God. In 1 Samuel 17, beginning in verse 34, David said to Saul, "Your servant used to keep his father's sheep. And when a lion or bear came and took a lamb out of the flock, I went after it and struck it and delivered the lamb from its mouth. And when it arose against me, I caught it by its beard and struck it and killed it. Your servant has killed both lion and bear. And this uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, seeing he has defied the armies of the living God." Moreover, David said, "The Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion, from the paw of the bear, he will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine." And Saul said to David, "Go, and the Lord be with you." In verse 45, David said to the Philistine giant Goliath, "You come to me with the sword and with the spear and with the javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hand, and I will strike you and take your head from you. This day I'll give your carcass to the camp of the Philistines, to the birds of the air, the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel. Then all this assembly shall know that the Lord does not save by sword and spear. For the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hands." David was a young person who did not see himself as being all alone. You know, I can remember those times growing up in which I felt like I had to be the only person in the world that went to the mirror on Friday night before I finally had a date with the girl that I'd wanted to date for months and finally mustered the courage to ask her, the only person in the world that had ever looked into a mirror and had a huge gaping pimple right between my eyes. I was facing it, I knew, all alone. I was the only Christian in our high school. Oh, there were a lot of people that claimed to be Christians. There were a number of people there that were unfaithful Christians. Yet I was the only one that was faithfully serving the Lord. There were a lot of times it was lonely. A lot of times I felt like I stood all by myself. But if I'd only had the wisdom to realize, I wasn't alone. Because I had the Lord who wins battles not with sword and spear. I was there armed with the power of the living God. David didn't see himself as one who was alone. He relied upon a faithful God. He trusted in the God that had shown himself and proven himself to be loving and merciful and gracious and protecting of him. David had already seen the working and the wonders and the power and the might of God. He had no reason to falter in faith, but every reason to be strong and courageous. And believe that if God had delivered him from the hands of a lion, from the snare of a bear, that indeed the Lord could deliver him from this great Philistine giant. David was a young man who loved God, a young man who was willing and wanted to work for God. He was a young man, but he won a battle that the aged, experienced soldiers of Israel were too frightened to fight. There is a need, a great need for young people who are faithful. A great need for young people who are faithful and who trust in the Lord. Who see themselves every day as they go into the halls of the school, as they walk about in their neighborhood or wherever they may be. Who see themselves not as young people going into the frick of the battle alone, but those who are going armed with the God who created the universe. The God who sent His Son to this earth to suffer and die on your behalf. You're armed with the same God with which David went into battle. Daniel found himself as a young man as a captive in a foreign land. He was one of the best and the brightest of Israel, one who was chosen to serve a foreign king. He had his name changed from Daniel to Belteshazzar in honor of one of the pagan idol gods of Babylon. Yet Daniel refused to defile himself. He refused to eat of the dainties of the king. Oh, he could have eaten and lived sumptuously, but he refused to defile himself with the dainties of the king. He made a deal with the chief of the eunuchs. And he said, "Give us vegetables and water, and come back after a period of time, and if we're not as good as the others, then we'll take the consequence. If we are better, you'll see that our God indeed has paid off." Daniel was a man who, as a young person, approached the king of Babylon. That was the empire of gold. He went up to a great monarch and introduced that great monarch to Jehovah. He was a young man who saw opportunities and was willing to take them. But you might well say, I'm not a Daniel. I'm not a Joseph. I'm not a David. But you know what you are? You're you. And for the Lord, that's more than sufficient. You're you. You are your unique individual person. As peculiar as you may be in your oddities, you're you. And it's not God wanting you to be Daniel, not God wanting you to be Joseph, not God wanting you to be David, but a God that wants you to learn from their examples and be a faithful, godly you. It very well may be that you may not face the kinds of challenges that David faced, or you may not see yourselves in the opportunities that Daniel and the others had. But you know what? You'll have your opportunities. You'll have your doors opened. You'll have those that you can influence for the cause of Christ. And as godly, faithful young people, be you. Be a faithful, godly you. And that's sufficient for the Lord. You may not be a David or a Joseph or a Daniel, but you can do what they did and thereby serve God. You can live a holy daily life in which Jesus Christ can be seen living in you. I started in January preaching through the Sermon on the Mount, intent upon helping us to begin to see the heart and the life and the expectations of Jesus a little more clearly. And I chose more or less as a theme for the year, into the heart of Jesus. As we begin to mold and shape our lives according to those beautiful Beatitudes, as we begin to mold and shape our lives, our attitudes, our actions, our deeds, by that exalted teaching from the Sermon on the Mount, we begin to live the kind of daily life in which men and women are going to see that we're different, that we're unique, that Christ is living and moving within us. We can be like Joseph and Daniel and David, by speaking boldly for God and by speaking of what God has done for us, by trusting and relying in God, by standing for our convictions. There's tremendous work to be done by young people. There's much that you can do that I don't want to say those of us that are older, because I have a hard time, don't want to class myself, I guess, that way yet. But you have opportunities, you have things that you can do. Maybe I say I have things that I can do as a young person that only I'm going to be able to have. Because you see, there are people that I meet on a daily basis that no one else in the congregation of Fredericktown meets. There are people that I know that nobody else there knows, that they may never meet outside of if we're able to convert some of those. You see, I've got opportunities. You've got opportunities that no one else has. You're indeed unique. I heard growing up that young people ought to be seen and not heard. But if that ever becomes our attitude within the church, we're in serious trouble. We need young people who are seen, young people that are heard, young people that have the willingness, the faithfulness, the conviction to stand for the cause of Christ and fight their battle faithfully. In closing, let me just read a few verses from the end of the book of Ecclesiastes. In Ecclesiastes chapter 11, beginning in verse 9, there's a passage of scripture, you know, that I wish I would have been aware of growing up. I think it would have saved me a whole lot of pain and heartache. Growing up, I remember hearing all of the sermons about how boys needed to go out and get a haircut, and the girls needed to wear longer skirts, and granted, those sermons needed to be preached. I heard all sorts of sermons about the impossible teenage years. And I think I heard enough of them. I finally decided I might as well prove them right and see just how impossible I could be. Grew up hearing those kinds of sermons, hearing a lot of negative things about young people. But oh, how I wish that I could have read these verses, particularly the end of Ecclesiastes 11. For see, there the wise man says, "Rejoice, O young man, in your youth. Let your heart cheer you in the days of your youth. Walk in the ways of your heart and in the sight of your eyes." Believe it or not, by inspiration, the wise man said, "Young people, enjoy yourselves. Have a good time." I thought teenage years were supposed to be something miserable. I wasn't supposed to be happy because I was going through all these changes. And my parents certainly weren't supposed to be happy because they were living with someone going through all of those changes. And if we had a lot of fun, we must have been doing something wrong. But the wise man by inspiration says, "Rejoice, O young man, in your youth. Let your heart cheer you in the days of your youth. Walk in the ways of your heart, in the sight of your eyes." But then he tempers it and he says, "But know that for all of these God will bring you into judgment." Enjoy yourself. Have a good time. Enjoy the years of youth in which you're encumbered with all the responsibilities of fatherhood and husbandhood and all of those kinds of things. Enjoy those years, but enjoy them with God in view. I think it's good he put that in there. It's a needed temperament because it's awful easy for young people to see themselves as invincible and the next thing to eternal. We had to go to Kmart this afternoon and buy Tommy a new pair of pants to wear tonight, an ink pen busted in his pocket. And I had a frightening experience while I was there. Was walking through, and there I saw a girl that I had in my first year at Northmont. And that wasn't so bad. But she had a baby. And all of a sudden I thought, she can't be old enough to have a baby. And I thought, well, you know, those kids that I had my first year as 13 and 14 year olds are now 23 and 24. And suddenly I felt ancient. Yeah, it just,
I know I aged 10 years before I got out of that store. It's awful easy to have a misguided judgment of time, of certainty of existence as a young person. Remember when being 30, some of you that have now passed it, those of us that have passed it, when 30 seemed old? And when if somebody got to 40 or 45, you're just amazed that they're still working. 30 is tremendously young now. 35 just looks like it's the beginning of prime. And 40's looking younger every day. I just can't believe it. It's easy to have a misguided conception of time in our existence, but young people, enjoy yourselves. Have a good time, but remember that for all of these things, God will bring you into judgment. Therefore, remove sorrow from your heart. Put away evil from your flesh, for childhood and youth are vanity. Remember now your Creator in the days of your youth, before the difficult days come and the years draw near when you say, I have no pleasure in them. Don't waste and squander your youth. You don't get them back, do you? You can't buy them back. You can't earn them back. Don't squander your youth. Had an opportunity to talk with a gentleman not long, in fact, have a Bible study with him and another man, who had a young man that grew up near them. The one who initiated the study, Tom, was a godly young man, lived a good moral life, had an understanding of God and a desire to serve God. The young man that grew up just down the road from them got into his teenage years and got very rowdy, ran with the wrong crowd, committed a very serious crime, and was just recently released from prison and is now out on parole. When he got out of prison, he got married just a short time after that to a lovely young lady. He realized that if he was going to take on the responsibility of being a husband and father, he needed to get his life straightened out. That there were a lot of things that needed to change, and he said, although I really didn't have much of a religious background, I knew if it was going to change, I had to have God's help for it to change. And so he went to Tom for help. Tom said he didn't feel comfortable teaching the young man by himself, but he said, would you help me? And so now, because there was a young man who as a youth lived a godly, righteous life, it's some years later, but the fruit's beginning to be born. There was another young man who wasted much of his youth, who has no one that he grew up with as a young person calling him for religious or spiritual advice. One man used his youth wisely, used it productively, and it set the stage for a productive later life. One man squandered his youth and has had to overcome tremendous hardships and obstacles in order to overcome those mistakes. A lot of things to put in the past. It'd have been a whole lot easier had both individuals faced their youth with the attitude of the first. Much easier. Oftentimes we think of David and Daniel. We think of Joseph. We think of them in their latter years, in which as elder spokesmen and statesmen, they were faithfully serving the Lord. We think of David as the great majestic monarch that unified and solidified the kingdom. We think of Daniel, who was, some say, close to the age of 80 when he was cast into the lion's den. We think of Joseph, who continued to reign and rule in Egypt along helping Pharaoh, who nurtured and developed the children of Israel. But those elder statesmen began by laying the foundation for a successful spiritual life as young people. Those of you that are young this evening, and you decide who that is, there's a lot that you can do. Success and happiness in later years is to a large extent dependent upon what you do with your youth. Rejoice in your youth. But remember that the Lord will bring you into judgment. Remember, your Creator in the days of your youth. Serve Him faithfully with all of your might. If you're here this evening and you're not a child of God, and by having heard the gospel preached, you understand what God is having to do in obedience to that. There's no better time than that to render that obedience. Time and life are just simply too uncertain to try to ever put off an opportunity to be obedient to the gospel. Sometimes, those opportunities for you are going to cease. There'll be no more. That may be in just a few moments, we don't know. But if you hear, you need to respond. Whether as one who's not a child of God and needs to be obedient to the initial phase of the gospel, why not do it now? If you're one who's been unfaithful or one who needs to make a public confession for anyone, why not do that now? So together we stand. Encourage you by singing the song.